Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to A Good Football Show. My name is Pat Corain. Today, I'm honored to be joined by Dane Brugler of The Athletic, author of The Beast Draft Guide, just an absolutely invaluable resource. And we're going to be diving into some of the prospects that jumped out to me from going through The Beast. Dane, welcome to the show.
Hey, Pat. Appreciate having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I know your time is limited today, so we're going to jump right into it. I want to start with the quarterbacks. This has been a quarterback class that's very interesting, does not have a ton of consensus. You have a first to second round grade on Kenny Pickett and Malik Willis. You have a second or second to third round grade on the other top quarterbacks. What's the earliest that you would select a quarterback in this class that was up to you? And where do you ultimately think the first quarterback comes off the board?
Yeah, you know, it's tough when you try to rank these players. You almost have to do a non-quarterback board because it's the position is so weighted compared to the others. I find it hard to really buy into any of these quarterbacks, to be completely honest. If I'm going to draft a quarterback in the first round, I better be convinced that that quarterback is going to be a top 15 quarterback at some point in the NFL during their rookie contract. And I just find it really hard to have any conviction in any of these quarterbacks that they're going to reach that status. I think Kenny Pickett could come in tomorrow and win football games. But is he the type of guy that can lead you to a Super Bowl run? If the answer is no, then, you know, what are we doing here? What's the point of drafting a quarterback like that? So, you know, Malik Willis, I'm a big believer in his talent, but there's a projection there, a big projection in terms of him developing the field vision, the anticipation, some of these details that it takes to be a winning quarterback in the NFL. And obviously with his mobility, his athleticism, that will certainly make things maybe smooth the transition. But I still have plenty of doubts, you know, with this quarterback class. So it's personally, I would not really consider any of these quarterbacks until we get to like the late first round. But that's not in reality. I mean, these quarterbacks always get pushed up. These guys are going to go. It's going to happen. Where does that run start? That's tough to figure out. You look at Carolina at 6, Atlanta 8, Seattle 9. I'm not in the camp that believes the Saints are, you know, going to go after a quarterback. I don't think that was the motivation behind that trade to get multiple first round picks in this draft. I think they want to get better this year in terms of adding a left tackle, adding a wide receiver. I think that they want to go for it now more so than necessarily address quarterback. Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, we'll see. And then the Steelers, obviously, do they make a move up to go get that quarterback, you know, with a trade? We've seen them move up, you know, 10, 12 spots before, whether it be, you know, Polamalu or Devin Bush. And so if the right quarterback is there, do the Steelers make a move? So it's, you kicked off this question by saying there's no consensus. And that's true, you know, publicly, you know, all of us on the outside, that's true in the league. There's not a lot of consensus among these quarterbacks, but I think that we all believe they're going to go pretty early.
You released a 7-round mock draft today, and you had Ritter going to the Steelers at 20. Do you think they're more likely to sit there at 20 and grab a guy like Ritter or Corral or Howell, who might be there? Howell probably, it seems like he's more in the second round conversation, but sit there and get a guy who falls, or do you think it's more likely that they trade up and probably land Willis or Pickett?
history tells us that if you wait, you're probably not going to get your guy. I mean, you know, the Patriots are able to do that last year with Mac Jones. But I mean, history tells us in the first round, if you want a quarterback, you go get him. You know, you be aggressive. And obviously the mindset, the mentality of that, that it makes sense. You don't risk possibly missing out on your guy by someone trading up ahead of you or maybe a few landmines in front of your pick. So I think odds would say if the Steelers are going to draft a quarterback, maybe they move up, even if it's moving up 3-4 spots, just to guarantee that you get your guy. History says that's probably the route they would go. But I think they could wait at 20 and still get a Desmond Ridder if Ridder is their guy. You know, we just don't know. Kenny Pickett, Malik Willis. I know Malik Willis to the Steelers got attached to him, I think, at the Senior Bowl, and it just became like a foregone conclusion that was going to happen. And all, you know, Malik Willis is going to go to the top 10. The Steelers have to trade up to go get him. The quarterback narratives are all over the place throughout this entire process. I do know that the Steelers have shown plenty of interest in Desmond Ridder. I was told the interview went really well. Ownership was part of that interview, which is always important. So I think Desmond Ridder is squarely in the realm of realistic possibilities for Pittsburgh if they stay there at 20.
Beyond Pittsburgh, has Ridder separated himself from Corral and Howell? You know, is that kind of quarterback three, or are those guys still in the mix? Maybe not for like the Steelers at 20, but to be a first round pick, maybe a team trading back into the end of the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, like we said, there's really no consensus. I wouldn't say that Ridder is, the third quarterback or a top three quarterback for every team. But, you know, it is interesting. You take a team like the Seahawks, for example. They have one quarterback coming to town for a 30 visit, and it's Desmond Ridder. And, you know, how do you read into that? What does that mean? I don't know, but I find it interesting. So, I think that it's easy to like Sam Howell. It's easy to like Matt Corral enough to draft him in the first round. That's a different question. I think it just goes back to what we said originally. There really is no consensus. But I do think there's enough first round chatter on Desmond Ridder. He's been in the first round of I've done two mocks in the last 2 months, and Ridder's have been in the first round in both of those mocks.
All right, let's move to running back. Kenneth Walker, a guy who's really exciting as a runner. In fantasy, the big unknown and kind of the thing that keeps people, I think, from being super, super excited is his ability or what he's shown thus far as a receiver. How far is he from Breece Hall as a receiver and a blocker? Because, you know, that matters a lot for fantasy football.
Sure. And, he just wasn't targeted a lot. And I think the question becomes, was that for a reason? You know, is that something that the Michigan State looked to avoid? Or was it, just the offense they wanted to run? And obviously, Kenneth Walker was so good as a runner that, you know, we don't need to really develop the screen game when we just know we can hand him the ball. And his instincts at the line of scrimmage to find the void, to find that lane, that's gonna take him to daylight. So this is where you try to figure that out by talking to scouts, talking to coaches, and almost universally it was the latter, where it was more about just wanting to get Kenneth Walker the ball the easiest way possible. They didn't have to feel like they need to force feed him the ball through the air. That just wasn't a part of their offense. They didn't feel like they needed to do that, more so than his inability to catch the football. He was targeted 16 times this past year, 0 drops. Obviously, you want more of a sample size with him as a receiver because it makes it a projection. It's guesswork based off of what he's done and based off his workouts. But, talking to teams, they don't have many concerns about Kenneth Walker as a receiver and as a blocker. Now, with Breece Hall, he's shown that he could do it. Breece Hall has caught at least 20 balls each of the last 3 years. He's a guy, and not just screens. He's a guy that can runs a few routes for you, do some things as a blocker as well. Although I think both these guys have some room to grow as blockers. They're not, I wouldn't say, above average in that category. They need to get better. But I think these are the two running backs in this draft class. Me, I prefer Kenneth Walker myself, but I certainly understand if Breece Hall is the first runner drafted.
Do you think Walker's at more of a risk to like land, like let's say with a Tampa Bay where, you know, Fournette's clearly going to play on passing downs? Like, is he at more of a risk of being sort of pigeonholed by a team, at least to start his career? Or do you view that as kind of, you know, if Breece Hall happens to be there and they have him higher on the board, they'll take Hall in Tampa Bay, or it just kind of comes down to more preference than that?
Yeah, and I think that that's what training camp's for, you know? You bring these guys to camp and you figure it out. You know, teams are going to do what's best for their offense. What's going to, you know, help us put defenses in conflict? And a guy like Kenneth Walker, I mean, I don't – if you're drafting him in the top 50, top 60, which is where he's going to go, I think you feel good about him as being more than just a runner. In today's game, that's an essential part of playing the running back position. So I think if you're drafting him that early, you feel good about him filling that role if necessary. Now, you know, for some teams, that's just it's a philosophical thing, you know, where, you know, you're going to want to use multiple backs as part of a series where you're keeping guys fresh and things like that. So, you know, I it's hard to say, you know, black and white that it's going to be this or that. But I do think that if you're drafting Kenneth Walker that early, you feel pretty good about his role to be on the field and on any down, any situation.
I want to move to Rashad White, who is a guy that's kind of like the opposite, where the fantasy community is really excited about him because of the receiving profile. He had 40.5 receiving yards per game, 2.59 yards per route run, which is awesome. He's got a solid rushing profile. He's got size. But reading the beast, you had projected him as a capable backup, giving him a fifth round grade in your mock draft today. You had him going to the Cardinals in the sixth round. Now I'm starting to freak out a little bit thinking he's big Eno Benjamin. We've done this before. We got excited about Kenny Gainwell last year, fifth round to the Eagles, and has not worked out great. So it wouldn't be the first time we got a little bit too excited about a receiving specialist type of back. But how do you view White? Can he be like a starting caliber running back at some point who has receiving ability? Is he more of kind of a specialist?
You know, and I see him as more of that cop back, you know, change of pace, you know, a complementary piece to your backfield more so than going to be the featured guy. That's my evaluation of him. That's my opinion. I think that's, you know, not, I wouldn't say a consensus around the league, but I mean, that's kind of the feedback I get on Rashad White. But you know what, for a guy like that with his talent, I could see him go third round. That's not like out of the realm of possibility. If a team, if that's exactly what they're looking for, a guy that, you know, you're going to use out in space, you're going to ask him to run some routes. You know, that could be a fit. That could be exactly what they're looking for. So this running back class is funny because we're going to see those first two guys go early in the second round or top two rounds with Kenneth Walker and Breece Hall. And then, you know, when's that next running back come off the board? Is it Spiller? Is it, you know, could it be a guy like Rashad White who, even though I think he is a little bit of a specialty back, if a team, that's exactly what they're looking for, they might look at him and say, we don't want to wait and see, you know, does he last to us in the fourth round? So we're going to take him here in the third. I think that's certainly possible. I think once we get past the second round, it's going to be interesting to see the order these running backs come off the board, third, fourth, fifth round. Rashad White's right there in that mix. You know, a guy like Pierre Strong with that speed, he's also in that mix. But his ability to catch a ball in the backfield, Rashad White, that's going to keep a lot of teams interested.
Any thoughts on where Tyler Algier goes? I know you're pretty high on him. He really popped to me when I was looking at the numbers. But it seems like a little hard to figure out, like, is he a fifth round pick? Does he have any shot of going day two? Any thoughts on him?
I think he could sneak into day two. I mean, he falls in that same conversation where once we get past those first two backs, nothing would surprise me in terms of who's that third running back drafted. And then what's the order from there? It just depends on what style of running back you're looking at. With Algier, do you wish he had a little bit more burst? Yeah. Do you wish he was, you know, just had a little more juice to his running style? Yeah. But you know what? I think besides that, he's got everything you want. 5'11", 225, very good in pass protection, catches the ball well. And then a lot of the running back specific areas, I think he's above average in terms of balance, in terms of patience, in terms of vision. You know, he's a really competitive player. And so I think there's a lot to like about Tyler Algier and kind of that James Conner mold as a running back who, you know, we know is at least paid like a top 10 running back in the NFL, maybe even higher. So Algier, for the right fit, for the team looking for a guy fitting that profile, could definitely see him come off the board somewhere in that, you know, 75 to 125 overall range.
The guy that was originally supposed to be the running back three in this class, maybe even the running back two, was Isaiah Spiller. In fantasy drafts, he was getting taken ahead of Walker in kind of the early drafts. You still have him running back three. There's buzz that the NFL still considers him as a potential round two pick, but you gave him a round three to four grade. Where do you think he ends up landing? Where do you think he ends up getting drafted?
Yeah, the numbers are confusing because you watch him on film and you don't see a deficient athlete. Is he the best athlete you've ever seen? Of course not. But you don't watch him and say, oh God, I wish you were a little quicker. He plays quick. He makes guys miss with his footwork, with his instincts. He's very controlled with his footwork in terms of not taking wasted steps and wasting any of that momentum. So it was really surprising to see the testing numbers. And this is where, you have to marry what's going on the tape and then what the testing numbers say. How do you reconcile that? And Isaiah Spiller is an interesting test case for that. I think more often than not, teams are going to lean towards what they saw on film. And I think something that really saves Spiller is the fact that, his receiving production. I think that's something that's really going to help him. The fact that his yards per carry increased every single year in the SEC each of the last 3 years. So I think he's a guy that you feel good about. You might not feel great about him. He might not excite you anymore because of those testing numbers. They're kind of sticking in the back of your mind. But I still think you feel good about what he showed on tape, the controlled feet, the way he can tie everything together, the patience, the vision, what he does in the passing game. I still think he ends up somewhere. He's going to go somewhere top four rounds. It's just, does he still go on day two, second, third round? Does he slip to round four? Regardless, I still think teams are pretty optimistic about him.
He's also one of the younger running backs in the class. Does that factor in at all here? I mean, I don't know if that like directly applies to the subpar athleticism, but certainly, makes you think maybe there's a little bit of untapped potential.
Yeah, the age thing is definitely it's polarizing around the league. Because it's tough. Different guys mature at different ages, both mentally, physically. And so I think it's kind of a case by case basis. It is interesting that he is, pretty much the youngest running back in this class, basically. And, he's had a lot of success in that first top competition at a young age. And, I think that plays into his evaluation. It's at least something it's a talking point when you try to lay out all the cards and figure out where Spiller belongs on your draft board.
All right, moving to wide receiver here. Treylon Burks, I think, is one of the most interesting evaluations in the class. You note he played 77% of his snaps in the slot with 83% in the slot backfield or in line. 68% of his 2021 receptions came within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. So not exactly like a traditional wide receiver. At the same time, he was extremely effective and efficient when used downfield. He's got good ball skills. How realistic is it to expect him to eventually transition to being an outside wide receiver? We saw AJ Brown in the slot in college. He's obviously a star on the outside now. Does Burks have a much tougher road ahead to make that type of transition? Is that even how he should try to, move? Should he just be a slot receiver in the NFL or kind of a hybrid player? How do you view him as like where he's going to be in 2 to 3 years' time?
Yeah, a lot of his profile, the traits say X receiver, guy that's size of a linebacker, 6'2", 225. Part of doing an evaluation like this is the context of, okay, why was he used that way? Was it as simple as this is the way, this is the easy, he's the best player on the field, and this was the easiest way to get the ball in his hands is by keeping him in the slot, by lining him up in the backfield, using him in that way to just manufacture touches. And I think there's something to that. I mean, nobody in the SEC had more plays of 20 plus yards last year than Treylon Burks. And, I think that going to the combine, not running extremely well, that was a little bit of a head scratcher, 4.55 in the 40 yard dash. Because you watch the film and you throw on the Alabama tape, they're not catching him once he gets out in the open field. So it is interesting how much faster he appears on the field as opposed to what he tested. And I think part of it is, too, that And this is something that needs to be watched with Treylon Burks. He was pushing 240 towards the end of the season, and by the time he's done with the season, started working out for the draft, some of that focus was just getting his weight back down to the 225 range, more so than training some other parts of his game. So you worry about him staying in ideal peak shape. That's something that's part of his evaluation. But the questions still remain in terms of, can he beat press on the outside? That's something he just wasn't asked to do quite often. Expanding that route tree downfield. I thought he caught the ball well down the field. I thought he tracked the ball well. Of his 18 targets of 20 plus yards down the field, caught 12 of them, zero drops. I mean, there's things to like that tells you he can be an X receiver. He can play on the outside, but there is going to be a learning curve for him. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So I think you were spot on by saying he's one of the more fascinating evaluations in this class.
It seems like he's going to end up going in the late first round, kind of the 20-plus range in the draft. That has a good chance of creating a situation where we're very excited for fantasy. You know, he lands with the Cowboys or the Packers or the Chiefs. Do you think it's as simple for him as landing with a good quarterback, or would it be better for him to land with a team like the Bills where, maybe he can kind of come on a bit slowly, like that learning curve you're talking about? He doesn't have to be the primary outside guy because they have Stephon Diggs. They've got Gabe Davis. He can probably learn slowly, get some slot routes, get some easier coverage on the outside, et cetera. How do you view like his landing spot? Is there, potential downside if he is forced into a big role right away, even if it's with a good quarterback?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think ideally, I do think we've had so much success from rookie wide receivers lately that I think we forget that for the longest time, wide receiver was considered maybe the longest in terms of transitioning from college to the NFL, because so much is about timing with your quarterback. Everything has to be perfect. You're facing press more than you did in college. You're facing a lot better corners. And so traditionally, wide receivers, it took a year. It took 2 years before these guys were able to acclimate themselves. But, we've been spoiled the last few years with some of these rookie wide receivers. Treylon Burks is probably more of the it's going to take a little bit of time. And I think if you especially, he has there's a chance he could land at 24 in Dallas. There's plenty of interest there. If he does, he's going to be expected to produce early, especially with Michael Gallup probably not going to be ready from the get-go, coming back from that knee injury. And obviously, you have CeeDee Lamb that's going to demand a lot of attention, but no more Amari Cooper, so no more Cedric Wilson as well. So going to a place like that, there could be maybe he'll have a tough time living up to that from the get-go, from day one. Meanwhile, he goes to Buffalo, which is where I had him in my mock draft. That's where you can bring him along at his own pace, and it won't be like, okay, he has to produce right away. That might be the better landing spot for him long term.
That's interesting. I'm going to talk about George Pickens, who's another kind of really tough evaluation. The consensus in the fantasy community is that he's sort of a boom bust pick. He dropped off statistically in his sophomore season. Then he tore his ACL in the spring of 2021, basically missed the entire season, played enough to show that he's healthy, and then impressed at the combine, despite being less than a year removed from the injury at that point. He was great as a freshman. How good was he in that peak form freshman season? And how do you view his NFL season if he can be that type of player in the NFL?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it was the offensive version of Derek Stingley, who was an All-American corner for LSU in 2019, and then he set the bar so high that he just the last 2 years, injuries was a big part of that, but wasn't able to replicate that. And Pickens, it's kind of the same thing. He didn't have quite the same success as Stingley did as a freshman, but he led the team in receiving at 8 touchdowns. His competitive nature is what I think stands out the most with him. How big he is, how he wins those 50-50 balls, his tracking skills. He's a player that is not going to give you the yak. You worry about that. If you're looking for a guy that's routinely going to make plays after the catch, not sure George Pickens is the guy that's going to be that for you. But his ability to win at all three levels really stands out. He's a graceful athlete, ran in the 4.4s at 6'3", 200 pounds. So he has wide receiver one traits. He has it. It's just, you know, can he return to that pre-injury form? Can continue to develop as a route runner? I'll be surprised if Pickens does not go somewhere in the top 40 for, you know, because I think there's too much there that, you know, we're going to see six, maybe as many as eight receivers go first round. We're going to see a run on those guys. Pickens is right there in that mix.
How do you think teams are viewing things between him and Sky Moore, who's sort of a little bit of the opposite case where, like, the only major red flag I see is that he's not really a deep threat, but, you know, everything else looks really good. And then the level of competition coming from a non-Power 5 school. But otherwise, he seems like a pretty safe bet. Is he leading the race there to be in that late round one mix over Pickens, or is Pickens still ahead?
I think it depends on what you're looking for. I don't, you know, we these receivers are all in the same bucket as pass catchers, but they offer all different things. And if you're looking at Sky Moore, like he's not your traditional X. You know, he's going to be probably best in the slot. I don't think he has to play in the slot. He could play on the outside, but he's going to be at the best in the slot where, you know, at Western Michigan, they ran a lot of quick game and, you know, slants. And, you know, he's so good with his reflexes to snare the football without breaking stride and then making something happen with his toughness and his speed after the catch. But with George Pickens, obviously, it's a different conversation. He offers something different. He gives you upside to be a future X on the outside as maybe a true number one for your team. So, you know, a team like the Colts, you know, I think that George Pickens, in a lot of ways, I think he fits what Chris Ballard likes at the receiver position. But at the same time, I think Sky Moore might be the better fit for what they have on the roster right now. Michael Pittman on the outside, you plug in Sky Moore as that running mate, either in the slot or outside. And I think that's the better fit. So I think team by team, they're going to look at it a little bit differently.
That makes sense. All right, I want to move to close things out here. A group of deep threat wide receivers. To me, they seem sort of like similar bets, but the NFL has sort of picked their favorite among the group, that being Christian Watson, who seems like he's got a chance of going in the first round and certainly wouldn't fall out of the second round. You have a second to third round grade on Watson. You also have a second to third round grade on Jalen Tolbert and a third round grade on Alec Pierce. The NFL definitely seems to favor Watson over the other two. How do you view their skill sets in comparison to one another? How close are these three? And ultimately, do you think there will be a big gap between where we see the first guy go and the last guy go?
There probably will be a gap because I think Watson is going to be overdrafted in the first round. You know, it's 6'4", and you're that size with 4.3 speed. I mean, he's crushed the process. Senior Bowl, the workouts, the combine, his pro day. But I don't know. I the price tag is out of my spending limit with Christian Watson. I would love to draft him in the late second, early third, and develop him. But I think where he's going to go is just outside of what I'm willing to spend. And it's because he's still very raw as a route runner. He, you know, way too many drops. If watching him at the FCS level, you want to see a guy that just dominates the catch point, and he consistently struggled to do that. And so I see a guy with tons of traits, and this is what the NFL drafts. They draft traits. But at the receiver position for a guy that's 23 years old, I just need a little bit more. If I'm going to draft him in the first round. So Christian Watson, I think, is going to be drafted probably a full round earlier than where I would draft him. And then a guy like Alec Pierce could still be available in, like, say, the mid third. You know, he's a guy that needs to add branches to his route tree. You love the speed. You love the size. You love his ability to high point, make catches over defensive backs. But he needs to be a little bit more than that. Needs to diversify his skill set and the way he plays. So, you know, and then Jalen Tolbert is probably somewhere in the middle where he adds a little bit more polish, just maybe not the explosive athlete that the other two guys are.
In a couple years' time, if one of these guys puts it together, who do you view as having like a ceiling that maybe goes beyond just being a deep threat? Like, can one of these guys emerge as their team's top wide receiver?
You know, I think it's possible with development. Being the top receiver, I think that would surprise me. You know, being a true number one, the focus of an offense. But I think that any one of those guys could end up being a really good number two. I think that's probably their ceiling for them. And let me give you another guy that you know we haven't talked about, Danny Gray from SMU. He's one of my favorite day three players this year. If there's a Darnell Mooney in this class, I think it could be Danny Gray. Legit 4.3 speed. You watch SMU tape, you see him win at every level of the field. So he can catch the ball, be a threat after the catch, can win over the top, can track the ball. You wish he was a better finisher. Way too many drops. But if the price tag is a late third or a fourth round pick, I'm feeling pretty good about Danny Gray. So, he could be that Darnell Mooney in this class.
All right, that's exciting. Dane, let the people know about the Beast and all your great work.
All you need is a subscription to The Athletic. And even if you sign up for 1 month and just try us out, you get this, you get the draft guide for free as part of that subscription. If you like the NFL draft at all, 0% chance you'll be disappointed with what it has to offer. Testing data for 1,700 players in there. Of course, all the analysis. I take a lot of pride in all the background work as well. So, I try to create something that as a true draft fan, I would want to read. And, I try to set the bar higher every year. And hopefully we achieve that. The feedback has been awesome so far. Also, I have my 7-round mock out today on the site, on The Athletic. So hopefully people go check it out.
It's incredible. I mean, the way you have it formatted as well, if you want to just kind of skim through, read the kind of big takeaways, read the strengths and weaknesses, you can. If you want to figure out like their recruiting profile, where they grew up and all that stuff, I mean, it's as deep as you want to go and it's super comprehensive. So can't recommend it enough. And thanks so much for joining us.
No, I appreciate that, Pat. Anytime.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Before we go here, I want to remind everybody that you can get an MLB discount here. The 2022 MLB season is underway, and NBC Sports Edge is giving our listeners a special offer. Get 22% off an annual Edge Plus subscription when you use promo code BASIS22. Get expert insight and access to tools that will give you an edge against your competition at one low price. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/Edge Plus and use promo code BASIS22 at checkout to save big this season. Just to kind of to wrap up some points here, after talking to Dane, I think the George Pickens assessment is one of the hardest ones out there, not just because he only really had a strong season as a freshman, but because like even that was very low raw stats. He had very touchdown-driven statistics there, which also makes you a bit more concerned about how much to trust it. But it was a very good season. He had 2.64 yards per route run that year. His teammates combined for just 1.32. Falls off as a sophomore to 1.93. Then he tears his ACL. But it's one of those things where if he can get back to where he was as a freshman, it could be huge. Justin Ross is another sort of similar guy in this class, but the NFL seems far more interested and has a lot more faith that Pickens can get back to that. My hope is they have enough faith to take him at the end of the first round. One of the reasons that I was so curious about, Sky Moore versus Pickens, Watson as well getting into the end of the first round as opposed to early round two is that, like, we are probably, for some of these guys, talking about the difference between the Chiefs and the Texans. You know, if you wait a little bit further, maybe we get a Colts landing spot. I agree with Dane that would be pretty nice, really, for either guy, but especially for Sky Moore. But there's kind of this danger zone that you got to get past. And the Texans, I mean, they should add wide receivers, especially if they want to see what they have in Davis Mills. So, you know, hopefully for George Pickens, we do have enough faith with a 4.47 40 at the combine, 125 inch broad jump, 33 inch vertical. That is pretty outstanding for a guy less than a year removed from an ACL tear. That's probably the biggest thing that jumped out to me, that, you know, he might be in that late round one mix. Certainly we've seen Jameson Williams stock up despite a much more recent ACL tear. So the NFL seems like they're willing to take a chance on that guy. And with that type of draft capital, I think Pickens would really have a very high ceiling, kind of a boom bust pick in the mold of T. Higgins. But that'll do it for this episode. Make sure to join us next week. We got the draft 2 weeks from today. So time to get pretty excited that we are approaching knowing where these guys are actually going to be playing football in 2022. See you guys.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.